Blog Talk Radio.
Another Saturday. Thanks for joining me. And hey, I just realized that over the last 4 weeks, the sound quality has been coming in and out. And I was part of a beta program for high fidelity, HD, high def. And it turns out that the definition was buggy. Very buggy. And man, I'll tell you, last week's program, I hope you were able to sit through it, because I was cringing at the problems that I encountered with the sound. And we are now off of that beta program, so you should be able to hear this program cleanly, without any interruptions, without any problems whatsoever within the audio. And I've had a couple of people email me and say, hey, Cliff, there's some problems here. Take a look at this, take a look at that. But this last week's program, boy, from start to finish, it was just not good. So thank you for hanging in there with me. In the future, if there is a sound issue, if you could just email me at cliff@earthancients.com, then I can jump on it immediately. Sometimes the affiliates that pick us up, my network is Blog Talk Radio. Our affiliates, which is Stitcher, Deezer, and a half a dozen other networks, sound quality, their audio quality is different in some cases, and I don't know how that happens, but maybe they get a cut that's better. But last week the cut was terrible. So if there is an issue, let me know. Give me an email and let me know what's going on, because I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So anyhow, welcome to the program. Big news out here in California. We have a monstrous El Nino, which is a water heating process that's happening down in the Mexico, south of San Diego area. And they've been measuring the water temps, and the water temperatures from San Diego up to Ventura County, which is above L.A., are about 77 degrees or more, which means that we're in store for hopefully a pretty substantial rainfall. And of course, those of you who are familiar with California's situation, we are dealing with a drought, and not a light drought. It's a serious drought. We've had it for 4 years. We're having to conserve water, and everybody should conserve water anyhow. It should be part of your consciousness, just because, you know, water is precious. But anyhow, apparently we are in store for torrential rains for many of the months. So our rainy season starts in 3 months, and so I'm looking forward to getting some solid rain for a while. It'll probably cause us problems. It'll probably cause some flooding and some mudslides and things like that. But heck, you know, if we can get our reservoirs filled, that's a big plus. So that's news out here. I hope everything's good where you're at and you're able to enjoy this program today. I want to mention somebody who is a big part of Earth Ancients, and that is Kurt Hardtongue. Kurt is out in Perth, Australia. Kurt is our resident artist, promotional and marketing specialist. The artwork that you see on Facebook, on our banner, on Blog Talk Radio station, is all created by Kurt. And he does a lot of our ads, too, for our sponsors. And I just want to reach out and say thank you, Kurt. This work that you do is fantastic and really makes everything look great. And couldn't do it without you. So you can see his work on Facebook, Earth Ancients. You can go to the group page, Earth Ancients Group, or you can see some of Kurt's work at Facebook, Earth Ancients Facebook on international page, too. So thanks, Kurt. We appreciate your help. Last week, I mentioned a special offer that the publishers of Zechariah Sitchin's works were offering. Remember, our guest last week was Janet Sitchin, and Janet told us about the book that's upcoming in October called The Anunnaki Chronicles, a Zechariah Sitchin reader. And as part of that program for next 2 weeks, actually it ends on the 22nd, Inner Traditions is offering a special discount. And this discount is 30% off any of the Zechariah Sitchin books that they publish. They've been publishing him for probably, I want to say 30 years, maybe even longer. So what you need to do, if you want to get that discount and get that new book, which comes out in October, is send me an email at cliff@earthancients.com, and I will send you not only the code, but a link to the page, which has all of the Zechariah Sitchin books from the very beginning. The Earth Chronicle series, the 12th Planet, and even the book on giants, which was one of his last books. So you get 30% off on any of his books, not just the Anunnaki Chronicles, which is a new book. And to do that, again, just send me an email, cliff@earthancients.com, and I'll send you the code for the 30% discount, and there's a special link. So that's something really, really to consider, and we hope you will. I'm looking forward to getting that book myself. And to add it to my collection. We're talking about satellites today. We're talking about satellite archaeology, satellite imagery, and I've been studying satellite imagery probably before Google Earth came on the scene. And those of us who are research investigators were able to use global positioning Landsat satellite imagery from it's the Geological Survey satellites that are available. And the thing that's really amazing about those is that they go pretty far back into the 70s, and the image quality isn't the same as Google Earth. But when I was looking at imaging back then, you could still see the surface of the planet fairly well. Detail was not good, but I've been involved, like I said, for a number of years looking at various anomalies and various ruin sites. But, you know, with the launch of Google Earth, things have completely changed. Now, in 2001, Keyhole Incorporated developed a method of viewing the Earth called geospatial data visualization. And that's a fancy word for image processing, multiple types of imagery from various types of satellites. And they were what basically happened with Keyhole. Keyhole was funded by the CIA, would you believe? And they obtained satellite imagery, aerial photography, and geographical information systems imagery, and combined it in a very brilliant way to create a patchwork or a massive image of the Earth that was able to be seen in one system, one software application. In 2004, Google purchased Keyhole, and then in 2005, they released Google Earth. And it's allowed countless amateurs like myself, as well as professionals, to see the Earth, to zoom in up to a few hundred feet onto unusual buildings, known ruins, unknown ruins, and a lot of discoveries have been made. Now, one of the areas that I looked at recently is in Indonesia, and we've talked about it here on the program before. Gunung Penang is now dated as one of the oldest pyramids on the planet. Dates to 28,000 years ago, and they continually find new dates as they dig further down. And this is a place that people need to get to. I mean, because now it's opened up. We've had Dr. Danny Hillman on the program, and he is continually finding more evidence of a very sophisticated ancient civilization that we just don't know the age of. And we also had Dr. Carmen Bolter on the program, and she has used Google Earth. She talks about it. But this is a place that we need to go and see more of. I can't get out this year, but there is a tour. And our sponsor, Ancient Mysteries International, will be going out there November 30th to tour not only the ruins in Gunung Padang, but also other areas in Indonesia that are very rarely seen by any of us in the Western Hemisphere, and specifically in the United States. I'm going to bring on, in fact, right now we have Bruce Cunningham, the president, and I'm just going to let Bruce tell us a little bit about this tour that's coming up in November. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Hey. Hi, Cliff.
So what else can you tell us about this tour that's coming up in November?
Well, basically, it's the first ever tour to several of these sites. It's going to be the first tour going to Gunung Padang, and again, to have Dr. Hillman as our guide at that particular site will allow the guests to get literally up close and personal to Gunung Padang and see what's really going on there, and almost be part of the archaeological dig. So that will be amazing. Mm-hmm. We also have, as you just said, Carmen Bolter is going to be kind of a guide-type host with us. And then we also go to the Candy Suku Pyramid, which if people Google that up, it appears to be an absolute Mayan pyramid in the middle of an Indonesian jungle. So, yeah. I mean, it's quite amazing. And then we're going to the ancient temple of Borobudur, the ancient Vedic Buddha temple that just I think we've all seen pictures, and I can't wait to see it myself. So, yeah, it's going to be quite amazing. It's going to have quite a value, too.
Yeah, go ahead. How can they get more information? What's the link to get the information?
Yeah, the website's ancientmysteriesinternational.net, and the email is info@ancientmysteriesinternational.net. And, any of the information's on there. It's quite a value. It's all-inclusive. I have extended the early bird special to the end of August, $15.99, 100% all-inclusive. And the flights from most parts of the world, especially in the U.S., are very reasonable that time of year, November 30th through December 6th. So it's quite a value, for sure. And, I hope people take it up, because it'll be the first ever. You'll be one of the first few non-researchers to ever go to that site, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, and now Dr. Danny Hillman is leading the tour on that pyramid, right? So you'll be able to see the latest excavations and whatever they're digging up firsthand. Is that correct?
Yeah. Basically, he'll be with us, so we'll be able to see anything that's going on. They found some artifacts there, and as they dig deeper, it continues to get older. It started out about 12,000 years old. Now it's, with the carbon dating, is over 23,000 years old. And who knows, as they dig deeper, how old it's going
right.
to get.
Just a fantastic opportunity. And AMI is going to be leading it. It's November 30th to December 6th. If you want more information, you can call them directly. They're waiting for you. It's 260-417-8548. Bruce, it looks like an amazing tour, and you seem to be like the only company that's going to the Pacific, and specifically the Indonesian Java area. Is that kind of your goal?
Yeah, I have a home over in the Philippines, so I spend a lot of time in Southeast Asia. We've done a couple tours to Angkor Wat. We're planning another one for next March. It's not in stone mm-hmm. yet, but hopefully with the spring equinox. And there's so many sites around Southeast Asia and the Pacific, Nam Madol and Micronesia, Bagan and mm-hmm. Burma, that just people don't, especially Americans, don't get out there much. And they're just, you know, right. they're eighth wonder of the world type of sites.
Yeah, it's amazing. I wish I could join you, but maybe next time, maybe the next one that comes up. Well, listen, thanks, Bruce. Again, that number for more information is 260-417-8548. And Bruce and his team are standing by. You can learn more about it. You can also go to Facebook and go to Earth Ancients and see some information that we have posted on the location. And I continue to post some of the photographs that Bruce and some of his tour participants have taken of some of these sites. And they are it's a new series of discoveries. It's just constantly new and things that we don't see enough about here in the United States and around the world. So thanks, Bruce. Appreciate your help.
All right. Bye-bye, Cliff.
So that was Bruce Cunningham, and that is a rock-bottom rate. And remember, that's for Earth Ancients members or people that are listening. Call in, and you can get that information on that tour. So, again, I've seen that area from the satellite point of view. And we've had a couple of people on the program who have spoken about satellite imagery that have made major discoveries. And it's funny that more and more of the amateurs and amateur research investigators are making these discoveries outside of the academic circles. We had John Jensen on the program last year, who has written a book on the canals and harbors of ancient America. He discovered a harbor off the coast of Florida that is conservatively estimated to be about 10,000 years old. He also has found canals up and down the East Coast that are obviously man-made, because they cut into the actual land many miles. And we've also had Holly Amberg, who is a 81-year-old researcher in Arizona, who has found an area in northern Chile, Atacama Desert. And it's a civilization that nobody knows about, that researchers are jumping all over themselves to get out there. And I haven't heard anything recently about a survey team that was going out there, but Holly continues to post photographs on Facebook of this ruin, this massive ruin. And what looks like a fairly sophisticated people that had agriculture, that built not only large complexes, but also what looks like an arena, either for meeting or for games or something. And nobody really has talked about it. And she's frustrated because she doesn't have the funding to send anybody out there. And, of course, she's not an academic. She's not somebody who would write and chronicle a discovery like this. So discoveries are made with Google Earth. And my guest today is Angela Michael. And Angela is on the program because she has made significant discoveries to the point where she has posted press releases on some of her work. And one specifically, a discovery in Egypt, went viral. Went viral to the point that CNN picked it up. And other major news agencies around the world, and basically shocked everybody with what she had discovered. So this is a pre-recording I made just yesterday. Angela is now on vacation, and have a listen, and I'll come back to you at the end. So my guest today is Angela Michael, and Angela and I actually have been aware of each other for, I'd say, about 9 years, maybe even longer. Angela is an independent researcher who has done some amazing work with Google Earth, as well as some other satellite resources, imaging resources. And I think her first project was Google Earth Anomalies. But anyhow, welcome to the program, Angela. It's so great to have you with us.
Thanks, Cliff. It's a pleasure to help you out and be on the program.
Well, hey, we're helping each other out. Google Earth Anomalies was your first venture into studying the planet. What was the motivation for that? We're going to move through a quick kind of an overview of the Angela Michael focal points of satellite research and get to some of the highlights. But I want to start with Google Earth Anomalies, because that's where I met you online. And that is filled with fantastic Earth anomalies. But what's kind of the genesis of your interest in satellite research or satellite imagery?
Basically boils down to just as a child, I had always wanted to be an Egyptologist from the time I could remember. I think I was about 8 when I discovered what it meant to be an Egyptologist. And I took that love and could not fulfill my destiny due to some hurdles that came up in my life. So I could not get a degree as an Egyptologist. Instead, I got an architecture degree, and I kind of channeled that love into my passion, and I just said, if I just start looking, build the field of dreams, and maybe things will start going from there. So I decided to keep going with my dream regardless.
Okay. And so what got you interested in satellite imagery? Because that's, obviously Google Earth helped open the door big time for a lot of people, including yourself, and you've made some major discoveries. But prior to Google Earth, what were you using? Were you using like Landsat imagery that you got from NASA's site, or where were you gaining your imagery? And why? And I guess the big question is why even consider satellite imagery to look at the Earth? Was that just something that you naturally focused on?
Well, no, it definitely goes back to, I have to say this for sure, Richard Hoagland.
Really?
I guess you probably remember in the 90s when he came out with The Face on Mars, and it was really big all over the media and everything. It kind of sparked my interest looking from space to find archaeology sites. And that was when I started doing a little Mars anomaly hunting just for fun from the old Viking imagery database that they put up.
Wow.
And from there, I just thought, well, why is nobody doing this on Earth? Why is nobody looking for archaeology sites from space? No one that I know of was, so that's when the idea kind of developed.
Okay. And 'cause I know Google Earth Anomalies has been around since since Google launched Google Earth, I think 2005. But you were researching before that, weren't you? I mean, you were researching, like, I mean, Hoagland's book came out in 1999. No, yeah, maybe about 2000. So you've been looking prior to, you've been looking on Earth prior to Google Earth, right?
Yeah, and I apologize for not answering that question. It probably started around 1998 after Richard Hoagland, and I started looking through some old Landsat imagery, which was very poor resolution, and I discovered a program called NASA WorldWind. This was kind of like the predecessor to Google Earth. You could actually look at USGS aerial imagery database was included, as well as Landsat, a database, and some Aster imagery. So that was my primary tool back then. And then, of course, now, Google Earth, it just opened up a bunch of new doors, especially when the resolution was so much clearer and better. And that's when Google Earth Anomalies was born.
Right. And now Google Earth Anomalies, just for our listeners, is, there's imagery around the globe. I mean, some of your concentrations are the Caribbean islands or the Caribbean Ocean, various offshore areas around Florida, the eastern part of the country, part of the United States. And there's places in Egypt, but I mean, you're actually looking or a continual look everywhere for these anomalies. And I was particularly interested because you did some great work in the Yucatan Peninsula. And one of my personal interests are these Mayan white roads. And it's funny because we both kind of, you know, made note that a lot of these roads lead into the ocean. And all of a sudden, you can see traces of them deep, deep underwater, because a lot of the images will penetrate into the water many feet. So so this anomalies page is still up, but you've actually gone much further than that, and you have been continually researching, and in August of 2012 you actually discovered two sites in Egypt, and I want to talk a little bit about these two sites. Can you tell us what you discovered? And that's the big claim to fame right now, still is.
Yeah, it's posed a lot of questions, and it has answers at this point. I had identified two sites in Egypt, and for years I have been trying to get archaeologists, scientists to help me, and I've contacted them off and on. Some of them I've called, some of them I've sent emails to, and they basically just ignore me. I'm not exactly sure why that's the case. I have gotten some more interest now that story went viral. There are some people now that are willing to help. We just have to get things organized to get things going. Of course, that's all about funding, of course. But yeah, it started with those two sites. I decided to write a press release. One site was northwest of the ancient city of Demai, north of the Fayum, Lake Fayum in Egypt. And then the other site was in Upper Egypt. It's actually west of a town called Abu Sidhum, so I named it the Abu Sidhum site.
Right.
And I had done an extensive search. This was back in 2008. My mother was diagnosed with cancer, and we were going through a very difficult personal time in our lives, and she was in the hospital quite a bit, and that was when I decided to search in Egypt. I had been searching, you know, off and on all over the place, and then that was when a lot of the imagery was available. So I just dove in, and I searched while she was in the hospital. So I had done this search probably for about 2 or 3 months, and anybody who looks at satellite images can tell you it's a tedious process to look for archaeological sites.
Yeah.
So I identified these sites as being the two best candidates that I could find that looked satellite, that they could be ancient structures. And, of course, that's when I wrote the press release, was in 2012. My mother passed in 2009, and honestly, it took me that long. I went through a bit of a grieving process and some difficult times, some dark days at that point in my life. And then I had taken a trip to Egypt for work. We actually went there after work, to be precise, as kind of like a little vacation after we had done some work in the UAE for a company I was working for. And, of course, anyone who visits Egypt for, you know, the first time probably going to tell you that it's definitely still a magical place. And just feelings came over me when I returned that I definitely should not put my research on hold. And I know that my mother would have wanted me to keep going. So that was when I decided to write the press release. And then it went viral. I think it was about 5 days after I released the press release. And it wound up on the Discovery News homepage, which was a complete shocker. So not what I expected.
Right. Now, not only did you find these anomalies, you had a couple of ex-diplomats, or at least the husband was a diplomat, contact you who were in possession of maps from, 800 years ago or something, very, very old maps that actually showed that area. Tell us a little bit about what they revealed to you.
Medat and Heidi contact me, and this is all documented in Discovery News, the second article that I wrote detailing everything that had happened. It was about 2 months after the press release, they saw the story break the news in Egypt, and they contacted me and told me that they were map collectors, and they had numerous maps to support this site in Egypt actually being real. So at the time, I was working, and it was very exciting to have news from someone and where I could go visit them in December of that year. So me and my fiancé, Ben, we went and visited them. They showed us some of their documents, and they talked to us, and some of the things I'm still not at disclosure to sign an agreement with them, since it is their intellectual property rights. They do still feel very strongly that their maps and their documents that they have do show that there's something very major at both of those sites that I identified.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything at all about what they have revealed, or is that kind of non-disclosure discussion because they're still trying to verify if this actually is there or what?
That is a bit of non-disclosure. I've honestly, I did sign an agreement with them, and it's very peculiar in the many different senses, but I just things go, and we'll see what happens. But I can tell you that I was contacted about 3 months after my return by a man named Mohammed Ali Solomon. He actually lives in Alexandria, Egypt, and he was going to the Abyssinian site, and he asked me if I wanted some video. So I said, yes, of course, it would be awesome. And he went there. He gathered video evidence. They walked around all of the complete site. They also gave some local stories that were quite fascinating. The locals felt very strongly that magic, every time someone would go there, they said that the wind was peculiar. And but true to form, when Muhammad was there, it was a completely clear day, him and his team. And before you know it, there was a sandstorm came up, and they were getting pummeled. You can hear it in the video and everything. But they relayed a very interesting story to me from the locals about a site that is adjacent, actually, to the Abu Sidon site. They said that it was about 10 years ago, so this was probably somewhere in the early 2000s, late 90s time period. An archaeologist supposedly came from Cairo and was digging into a natural-looking hill. He hired some of the locals to help him, quite a few of them. Apparently, he dug up some very interesting artifacts. And according to what I've been told, this is all hearsay, of course, the artifacts were of Hebrew origin, which implied that there was a Hebrew connection to the site that's adjacent to Abu Sidon. And then the story goes that they covered the holes and everything back up. He took the artifacts to Cairo, and apparently they've never been seen again. He shut the whole dig down and left. So that is the story. And yes, I do think there's something controversial with Abu Sidon. I do not think, however, that whatever is contained at Abu Sidon, if it be Hebrew, if it be Egyptian, I do not think that there should be any kind of a threat to any religion. I don't see why that would be an issue. If anything, my feelings are that whatever turns up, it may even actually bring the two, the Muslim and the Jewish religions, together, because it may show that there were ties in the beginning that have been split. So those are my personal views on the matter, and I think that's why a lot of things have been suppressed.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. There was a video that was shot of one of the pyramidal structures, and I was surprised to see that when, I can't think of your friend's name that went out to videotape this, he actually shows an entrance way with a well-cut canal or tunnel, which is surrounded by, it looks like, a hand-cut stone. So, I mean, when you see that, this is not a passive discovery. This is a very important discovery. And when you got that video, what did you think?
That was actually video that we have of another site. And let me tell you a little about this site. When I had visited Heidi and Madat in Egypt, she showed me a very rare map that she has in her collection. She had it on her iPad, and I briefly got a chance to look at it. She showed me the area that I was very familiar with because I have done an extensive search of Egypt. And according to her map, it was from Napoleon Bonaparte's expedition, this map that she had. There was one particular mound identified as a pyramid on the map. So she pointed it out to me, and she said, "Do you know anything about the site?" I was like, "Oh my gosh, yes. I marked that as a possible, you know, artificial mound years ago." So after Muhammad,
was it part of the major find that you posted and sent a press release for? Was it around that general area, or is it a completely different place?
No, this is a completely different site, which makes it so interesting because we found even more than just those two in the press release. So what happened was, after Muhammad had visited Abu Sidon, he asked me if there was anywhere else that he would I would like for him to go. And so I told him, yeah, there's this one site. I told him where it was, gave him GPS coordinates. So he sends me back video of what looks like a mound on the outside. It's completely natural looking. But when you go up, there is actually an entrance into the mound. When you go in, it's very obvious that the mound is not natural. In fact, the whole thing was very artificial. So you bring up a good point, though, because what's very interesting about the Abyssinian site is it does look very natural, but we do know that limestone can melt with water over time. Inundation, especially water inundation, can melt limestone. So we have a theory that perhaps the whole area could have been flooded at some point in time. And we now feel that Abu Sidon may have been underwater partially.
Well, that was
why it looks so natural.
Yeah, that was my next question, is that it looks to me that area was underwater, which would make it extremely old. And this is another issue, is that if it's, you know, somehow they get some natural organic property there, or some material, and they test it, and it shows that it's older than, you know, the Giza Plateau, then that's probably a reason why that they're not out there digging, which is confusing to me, because what you found is a fairly significant discovery. What do you think about that?
Well, I can refer to some very obscure stories and rumors that I've read about the Great Pyramid of Giza. This is quite interesting. Apparently, there is an old Arab story that before the casing stones were completely dismantled, I think it was about 50 feet up, there was actually a water line on all the casing stones at the Great Pyramid. So that, and there's, of course, other evidence, the Sphinx, the exterior of the Sphinx body. I honestly feel, also looking at some other sites we're working on, this is just of the iceberg. I feel that what we're looking at here, and I haven't spoke to you about this before, but we definitely feel that this could have something to do with perhaps a local flooding event of the Nile. And it could possibly be, I was just talking to a colleague about this, could possibly have been the Saron volcano event, which I'm sure you're familiar with on Santorini, the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
It possibly could have caused a local tsunami to flood this area in Egypt. That's one possibility. Of course, there's another one, you know, that it's another event. So, yeah, we definitely feel like there's some type of a flooding thing that has obscured many of these sites and kind of covered them over.
Have any local archaeologists considered your discoveries and have actually begun to go out and actually do any kind of excavations of any of these places?
That's what's the really uncanny thing about all this with Egypt, is I'm constantly being ignored when I ask for help. I mean, I have government officials, top government officials, that are connected to me on social media. It's almost like they're watching me, which I'm fine with because I don't have anything to hide, of course.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they're keeping it. They don't want to acknowledge it. And the only thing, reasons I can think of, is because perhaps it could be something very controversial or something that's going to, you know, overturn the apple cart, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mention that, officials, because in the years that I have had any dealings with Zahi Hawass, the at one time the supreme director of the Giza Pyramid, there was tons of speculation that he was not only covering material up, but limiting excavations in certain areas of the plateau for odd reasons. It's a lot of political unrest there, but it seems that there is a very tightly guarded area other than the Great Pyramid itself and the surrounding ruins that people are not allowed to go in certain parts of that of the plateau just because there's, I mean, it's just probably some amazing things that are under the sand. I have to say, it's amazing that you were able to go where you were without a lot of permits, because we just had Carmen Bolter on the program, Dr. Bolter, and she was telling us all the hoops she had to jump through to do the pyramid code, the series, and so you just walked right on the sand. And of course, you're pretty far away. Where you are at is not close to the Giza Plateau, and I don't think they monitor as closely. Is that what you think?
Well, I mean, it wasn't me that went there. It was actually Muhammad and his team. And it's fairly easy for an Egyptian just to go visit a site. I mean, there's nothing wrong with visiting a site and taking video. You know, it's when you start the process of actually digging and disrupting the soil that when you can get in trouble. And his team didn't do anything like that, you know. Of course, he knows that, but I stressed to him the importance of not doing that, as we just wanted, you know, video, any kind of evidence that he could gather at the site. So,
I know that you have talked with Carmen a few times. Do you have anything, any interest in this new labyrinth that she has uncovered using some satellite imagery radar, some ground-penetrating radar? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I do think it's quite interesting. And yeah, I have spoken with her on Skype, and we've talked about things in Egypt and the powers that be and all that good stuff. And I do know that she's also facing a Herculaneum task with that site and getting the answers that she wants. So it, in all probability, there could be a connection. This could be some pre-dynastic, and of course the archaeologists and Egyptologists label that time period as archaic in the Egyptian history.
Mm-hmm.
Period of time could have something to do with this predecessor to Egypt. And I am of a strong opinion that the Egyptians did know something about this previous civilization that was there. I do not think that the Egyptians were responsible. I think that they're the ancestors, yes, of these previous people. But I do think that a lot of the pyramids, they were built on limestone outcrops that were already existing. You know, they would start with a core, and then they would build around the core to create a pyramid. It's always been my thought after doing this research for years that these limestone outcrops that they built on were in fact ruins from the previous time, before time, if you want to call it that, from the ancient Egyptian world, the time before time. So yeah, I think they knew about it, and I think that they honored these sites. I'm not exactly sure why we know nothing about this previous civilization. It's not mentioned by the Egyptians, or it could be that maybe it has been, but there's a reason that it's not been made public. I have no clue, but I do know that there's a lot of evidence to suggest an even more ancient, you know, origin in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the time you found these this pyramid complex, you actually created a very interesting and well done video for some crowdfunding. How did that end up going? I've always wondered. I think I donated some money towards it, but I didn't see what the final results were. Did that pan out very well, or what?
No, I didn't have a lot of luck with crowdfunding, and I think it partially had to do with the fact that I released the crowdfunding campaign a year after the story went viral. I think if I would have released the crowdfunding campaign during its virility, we would have got a lot more investors to back us. Yeah, I mean, we did get some money, but it wasn't enough, and the project's just been on a standstill. Of course, as you know, I did create the nonprofit, the Satellite Archaeology Foundation, which is incorporated. I created it so that people can donate to me into this research. And it is for a nonprofit because this is not what my work is about. And anybody that knows me will definitely tell you that I'm not in it for the money. I mean, I've obviously put years into this, and this is something that I love. This is my passion, but it definitely doesn't pay the bills. But yeah, there is hope that in the future, that the Satellite Archaeology Foundation, I have a lot of great ideas for projects that I want to create. Of course, it just all depends on the funding, and you know that from experience with other people that you've interviewed, like Carmen. I know she has a project now, too, so
yeah,
not easy.
The Atlantis project, yeah. So have you started another campaign, or is it just this new site that has a donation area in it? The new site is called Satellite Archaeology Foundation, that's actually the website too, right? Satellite Archaeology Foundation, which actually has some of your research on there, and also a call, some of your previous research also, but also request donations for support to continue your work. Is that correct?
The actual address is SATA, S-A-T-A, foundation.org. But yeah, if you type in Satellite Foundation in Google, it'll pop right up. But yeah, I'm to the point now where I am writing a book, and I'm sure you'll probably want to discuss some of this with me, because in this book, I'm going to actually include some GPS coordinates. And most of my followers know that I'm very adamant about keeping a lot of these sites, you know, to myself, simply for the fact that I want to protect them. But yes,
well,
the news all now is just
Wait a minute, Angela. Wait a minute. Yeah, this is critical information for our listeners. Now, I want to tell our listeners, all the years I've known Angela, she will put up an image, satellite image of a looks like a ruin in the water, or it looks like a pyramid or something like that, and she'll go, "Look at this, everyone! Look at this!" And the people will go, "Okay, Angela, where is it so we can check it out?" She goes, "I'm so sorry, I cannot divulge the coordinates for this image." So whenever she says that she is going to divulge coordinates, that's, I mean, my mouth is, my jaw is dropping, because I have to ask her why she would do something like that. So go ahead and tell us why, because that's rare for you to do something like, you know, give the satellite coordinates for an image, for a location on Earth.
Well, you know, as I've told you, I definitely want to keep, and any archaeologist will tell you this, I'm very, very strict about this. You know, I want to keep these sites private, primarily because I don't want looters there. I don't want treasure hunters there. I don't want anybody that's going to violate the integrity of any of these sites. So that's why I keep them secret. It's not that I'm hoarding them all up or keeping them to myself, because I do know that eventually I have to share them if we want to get, you know, some answers. Doors have not opened yet. They're still closed. But it's the idea of my book now. It's going to be called Satellite Archaeology on Wings of Discovery. And the book will definitely be an outlet. And it will also be a way that people can support my research, which I've never had a way really that people can support other than donating. But now they can buy a book. And hopefully that'll be out here before Christmas.
Before Christmas?
Yeah, I feel it's definitely time to show some coordinates and show people some of the things that I've seen. Because what's very interesting about this research is, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't, I think, 10 years of research until my eyes just completely started opening and I started really making connections. Because that's what's so interesting, is when you start looking a more microscopic view of the world, macroscopic view, looking at the microscopic, it just becomes quite amazing. And when you start documenting all these sites, you start making these connections. You know, I have some sites overseas that are very similar to some sites in the U.S. And I don't even know that there are any other archaeologists in the world looking like this. I mean, most archaeologists will look at one site, one particular site. Me, I'm all over the place. I've been all over the place for years. So that's good, but it's taken me 10 years or so just to start understanding what I'm seeing and making the proper connections. So that's what's so exciting about the book, is you're going to see some connections that I've never told or never released to anyone. And I think it's pretty astounding, because it suggests that America was more connected than people realize. And, of course, you know, people like Scott Walter, America Unearthed. I know I heard that interview with him, which was really good. And they're putting these ideas into the public's mind. And now that I have the research, there's some satellite imagery I have that can back some of these ideas up. I think it's going to be a real eye-opener to some of these researchers, too. So I'm really excited about it.
Definitely. What was the title of this book again? Is it a firm title, or are you still working on a title?
Oh, it's definitely a firm title. It's Satellite Archaeology on Wings of Discovery.
Satellite Archaeology on Wings of Discovery.
Yep.
Very good. Okay, very cool. I think we should talk a little bit about some of the, you've obviously found some significant areas, primarily in Egypt, but let's talk for a minute about one place that we were both excited about, and I hope you can tell us a little bit about this. You had somebody go down to a location and verify what I thought was a Mayan ruin in the water, and I think you wrote that it actually wasn't what we thought it was. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the great thing is that the younger generation is paying attention to people like me who have a thirst for the truth and are searching for knowledge. And younger archaeologists, younger entrepreneurs are contacting me with great interest. And that's what's so amazing about this story, is there was a guy who wanted to go on some sites, and he's still there. He wants to go to some more. So I sent him to one of the most promising in the Caribbean, and unfortunately, it did turn out to be something modern. But, you know,
Let's stop for a minute. That what we saw, and this is an image that I have posted on my Facebook page. I know Angela has had it on her page, her Facebook page, as well as I think she even has it well suited positioned on her website. But this is a photo of an image of a partially exposed, what looks to be a structure, a building structure of some kind. And we both have been going back and forth and back and forth. And this is one of these images that Angela flat out refused to give me the coordinates for. Because I don't know why. She's very, very cautious. And I don't want to say secretive, but she's very protective, that's the word, of her discovery. So anyhow, you had somebody who went down to the Caribbean to find this, and you're saying now that he claimed that this image that we thought was a ruin was actually something more modern. What was it? What did he suspect it was?
Well, we just found that it is a modern structure. honestly, I have not seen anything yet, any of his videos or anything. So I can't really tell you anymore. He's very busy. He's an entrepreneur himself. And so I still haven't got all the data back from him. So that's the best that I can tell you right now.
Okay. Well, that's good. No, I appreciate that, because those are some of those areas I'm like, wow. Hey, I want to talk about one place, and then I want to ask you a few more questions, and then I think we'll have time. But on your site, you have a photograph of a place I have never heard of before. It's on the Giza Plateau. It's known as the Wall of the Crow or Wall of the Crown. And you actually have a really good article about it. And the article is called What Secrets Still Lie Buried at Giza. And you actually have illustrations from, I guess, the 14 or 1500s of the megaliths that make up this wall. And the image that you show, and I just found this on your site, the image itself is massive. Do we know what this was? Was it a land bridge crossing a riverbed? Because from the air, it looks like it was a riverbed one time. What is that?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. No one really knows what the Wall of the Crow was used for. There's been a lot of speculation, a lot of theories. But I can tell you the images that you see, and if you go there and look at it today, I think they said anywhere from 30 to 40 more feet are still buried. Talking about a 50-foot wall made out of megalith that looks very old. It's one of the great mysteries on the Giza Plateau that could possibly hint at some origins that are older than the dynastic Egypt time.
It's amazing that we don't hear more about it, because from the air, it's huge. It's not small, it's huge. So
yeah, it's very big, and I can tell you some of the theories. I mean, and you can read the article as well. Some have been that it was actually a causeway that was used for a pyramid that is no longer recognizable as a pyramid, which points to the mound that I had identified a long time ago called Gebel Ghibli, which is quite curious, because if you look at Gebel Ghibli from the ground, which I actually got the chance to go there on my trip to Egypt, I made certain that I was going to get to go by that mound and look at it from all angles, looks just like a natural mound. But there have been theories that the Wall of the Crow may have been a causeway to the Gebel Ghibli, and the Gebel Ghibli is, in fact, a pyramid, a very, very ancient pyramid that has lain undetected on the Giza Plateau for a very long time. And what's even more curious, on my trip to Egypt, I rode around it with camels, and it actually looked like someone had done some digging in this mound. They had dug into the side of it, which is quite curious. And if you go to the Sphinx site to this day, you can actually see Gebel Ghibli from the Sphinx, and you can see the big hole that someone made digging into the side of it. So there are just so many mysteries, not only in Egypt, but in the Yucatan, and you know the Yucatan as well, and just so many mysteries that we've just begun to scratch the surface. And it's amazing. This is the beginning, really, of alternative archaeology. You know, we're seeing these authors that are just scratching the surface and just starting out, like Graham Hancock. And there are so many sites that we haven't even begun to understand. And some of these sites, this is the theory in my book that I'm going to be talking about. If you're going to be looking for any kind of a ruin that's 10,000 years or older, well, that's in Egypt. Most of the pyramids are made out of limestone, and like I hinted at earlier with Abu Sidenham, you know, any kind of limestone that's exposed for a very long time is going to begin to melt, kind of like concrete. So imagine a mound that was once a pyramid, 1,000 years, and perhaps there was rain in the environment, and even a flood came through and flooded the area for maybe 200-300 years. You know, over time, you're just going to be looking at a hill. So I think that with satellite archaeology, I mean, they're just starting to scratch the very surface. If you're going to be looking for structures that are older than 10,000 years, and I do believe there are many all over the world that once this knowledge gets out, you know, it's going to spawn satellite archaeology into even more great heights than I can even think of right now. But I think once the younger generations realize that they may not be looking for a structure, you may be looking for a hill, you know, that is laid out to look like a structure from above. It's just going to open so many new doors.
You're thinking, how about like the Bosnia Pyramid, which is a mountain that was forcibly converted to a pyramid with cement. Is that what you're suggesting? Is that maybe prior to 10,000 years they began forming more natural hills and things like that? Or are you suggesting that maybe there was a, this could be another possibility, is that because of earth changes and tsunamis and high water tables covering pyramid complexes, that they were dissolved and what's left is natural-looking hills. Is that what you're suggesting, or is it just a combination of everything?
Well, I definitely think it's a combination of the element and of something being that old. I mean, let's look at Europe, for example. You know, let's look at places like Pompeii, which have been completely, you know, covered over with tannic ash, and you can't even find those civilizations. Earth changes, you know, they happen all the time. And for us to think that we know all of the civilizations, we found every single one of them, I think it's just being a little egotistical. I mean, you know, our history on this planet of just documenting history is such a short time period. Think of all the civilizations that have rose and have fallen before recorded history as we know it. And who is to say that, you know, something couldn't happen to this civilization to just completely wipe everything out? You know, the earth is unforgiving. Nature is unforgiving. So I think that once we realize the power and we begin to see how climate can affect ruins, yeah, I think there's a lot more out there that we haven't even found. And I can tell you, I've seen some very interesting megalithic ruins in France that nobody knows about, and they haven't even been documented as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these features, they just boggle your mind. And what's even more amazing is how come nobody knows about them? Well, it could be because they've just written them off as natural geology. But yet when you go and inspect some of the sites, you start seeing some signs like Stonehenge. You know, you have the grooves and the cusps, the lintels that hold the lintels together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's just a lot more out there that we haven't even started documenting. And like I said, alternative archaeology, all this is the infancy. It's in its infancy. We are the futurists right now. This is the frontier. And I think it's pretty darn exciting. And, you know, if there are a few barriers that keep this from happening in the beginning, that's the way it goes. I mean, you know, look at all the great minds in the past. They've all come up against barriers and people who said, oh, you're crazy. You know, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, only to find out later, oh, guess what? These people are right. So the future right here. We're the futurists, and there's a whole lot of ground that needs to be covered yet. I think it's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting. Do you think that you may have upset some traditional archaeologists when you've made your discoveries and they didn't make them? Or do you think that because of their education, they're kind of blinded by the fact that they're not trained to see what looks like a mountain, which could be an ancient building of some kind that's been reformed with the elements?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of that. And I definitely don't feel that it's because they're not intelligent enough. I just think that it's just about the way you see. You know, I mean, look at how long satellite technology has been present in our environment. You know, where you can pull your phone up and see where you're at on Google Maps. It's just been
right.
A few years, really. So you're talking the very, very beginning of looking from a new perspective. You know, it's like a new science. So I definitely do not fault any of the archaeologists. And, I mean, I was frustrated that they would shun me and think that I'm very, you know, unintelligent. Write me off that quickly when I've been doing this for many, many, many years. But I think there is some ego at play.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with anything new, and especially with a new way of seeing, it's going to require people to think in new ways.
I agree.
So, yeah, I mean, I know it's in its infancy, and the only question is now, where do we go from here? What all are we going to find once we begin to see that there are actually ruins hidden in places we never thought? Just think of what the possibility.
Yeah. I think the old guard is dying off, you know, and the old schools and the rigid thinking of archaeology and anthropology is beginning to fade. And they're going to have to start thinking about rewriting some of these books, especially as the discoveries of very old societies like Göbekli Tepe, places in Mexico and South America show that and are dated. The biggest find in the last couple of years has been Indonesia with Gunung Pinang, this pyramid that dates to 28,000 years ago. And they're not even done excavating it yet. It could be 30, 40, 50,000 years ago that it was built. And the engineering and the mathematics behind these pyramids show that there was a very sophisticated society around. So I think you're right. We're just beginning to uncover the data on a much earlier civilization. So, and your work goes towards that. So there is a lot of really, really exciting discoveries to come. Do you know, I don't think they teach satellite archaeology in college, do they? Have you looked into that? I doubt it. It might be like an elective. But do you know of any classes that are teaching that?
I do know there are some classes and there are some professors, mostly at Ivy League schools. I think there's a few at, I think there may be some courses taught at Cambridge, at Yale,
okay.
And perhaps Harvard. But yeah, it's not the mainstream yet. It's not, you know, the curriculum, this is just the beginning of it. And
mm-hmm.
There's going to be so many more technologies just within the next 10 years. That are going to be able to allow us to detect things from space that we never knew were possible, we never even thought about. The satellite infrastructure and the satellite technology is only going to continue to advance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's just amazing to know what's already could be up there, you know. used by the government and powers that be, that I believe they do have some ways of detecting that we have no clue about. Of course, that's a different subject altogether.
Well,
but yeah,
we know
it's
that,
completely.
Yeah,
it's going to morph. Satellite archaeology is going to morph based on the technology at hand. So
it makes it a hell of a lot easier to find a place and look at it than having to drive around and bump into it. So it's like it's almost like a no-brainer. It's funny that they haven't welcomed the technique of using satellite imagery with open arms more readily. It's typical for archaeology, which is kind of old. We've had a lot of guests that are not really impressed by archaeologists. They feel that it's kind of a dying science because it's kind of lost in time and hasn't kept up with the newest discoveries and research and things like that. But I want to ask you real quickly. We talked about ground penetrating radar at a couple of your discoveries, and did you ever get a chance to get out there at the Giza Plateau area, or I'm sorry, further south or north, to do any ground penetrating radar? Or is that part of the crowdfunding that you were working on?
Yeah, that was part of the crowdfunding campaign. So no, we haven't had a chance to do that yet. Of course, we would love to, but it's going to have to happen when it's time.
Yeah. We should talk to Klaus Dana about that, because he's involved with this technology that pierces the surface of the ground up into a couple of miles under the ground. And his discovery, or the company that he's aware of, is the one that found this new labyrinth. It's not new, but it's an ancient.
Yeah, oh, I've definitely talked to him. Yeah, we've had conversation before.
Have you? Okay, amazing. Well, listen, before I let you go, is there anything that's, other than this book, is there anything new that you can tell us about? I did want to kind of ask you about this album. You have a section called Underwater Lost Cities. Actually, it's called Underwater Lost City Candidate. And, of course, it's undisclosed location. But you posted it a couple of years ago, and a fantastic group of photographs of what look like building foundations. Is this something that's been updated and looked at recently, or is it still waiting to be checked out?
Which site are you talking about?
It's on your Satellite Discoveries and Google Earth Anomalies. It's December 20th, 2012. It is Underwater Lost City Candidate, and it's in or is it? Doesn't really say
the Bahamas area.
Yeah, I think it's south of the Bahamas. It's
yeah,
it's a whole
quite a few.
Of the building. This one is this one doesn't actually give a location. It doesn't give a location. It just says, this album consists of undisclosed areas where sunken city sites may be located. And to my mind, these are fantastic. This is one of these amazing discoveries that you've made of building foundations that are just slightly underwater. And I think that...
Oh, yeah, I know what you're
talking
about now.
Yeah. So have you done any follow-up on that?
No, it's like the rest of the site. The hope now is, I really don't think that the funding is going to come through any kind of academic association. I could be wrong. You know, 15 years from now, things could have changed. So the hope now is perhaps one day there will be a television show that can check out a lot of these sites. That's one of the ways I think probably going to get the answers, because they do have the funding and they can go to some of these places. And it would definitely make for some very interesting television. So I think possibility.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Let me just talk about one last thing about ancient America, because we've been covering this for a while, and we've both discussed the work of John Jensen, who has basically used Google Earth satellite imagery in discovering what looks like ancient harbors, ancient canals, and things like that. Do you think there's a much older United States than we realize, a much older North America?
I would definitely have to agree with that. I'll give you this one story that has intrigued me for a very long time and has led me to look for things in the United States. Looking at four ancient sites in the U.S., it's so heavily populated that it's very difficult to find traces or to know what's not modern and what's ancient. So there was a story when I first started out. I had someone, have people send me things a lot all the time, and someone was telling me about this obscure Reader's Digest article, which I thought was really interesting. Reader's Digest, of all things, that spoke of a very ancient America. They said that when the colonists came to this country, they found many, many fields had already been cleared and cultivated. They also found roads that went on for many, many miles that were very straight. And I have it under the impression that many of our modern-day roads were built on top of, in fact, very ancient roads. So, yes, I do think there is an ancient America here, and I suggest to anyone that wants to look for this, the only problem with that is you need very old satellite or aerial images. The best place to look is in the USGS, and they have a global visualization viewer where you can actually look back into 1950s aerial imagery of the United States. Far back as it goes, you can go back into the 1940s, 1945, something like that, but that's generally what I do when I find something in America or on the coast that I think is very interesting. I'll go look at this database, and of course, it's a tedious task,
yeah.
But anyone who wants to search for the ancient needs to look through the database, and that's a good way to find things. Of course, even then, you know, the 1950s, you've got quite a bit of modern activity then. So if anyone knows of any 1920s, you know, aerial imagery, I'd love to hear about it. So
excellent.
See, that's the only problem. You need an old data source.
Well, that's interesting because USGS is they have their satellites, and they go back into the 60s, and then they're constantly getting declassified military imagery, which is a combination of high-flying aerial photos along with satellite photos from some of the early satellites. And you're right, the quality is really hard to look at, but you can find some interesting things in some of those early images. Especially in Central and South America, they're really fun to look at. They're just Google Earth is such a blessing. We're so blessed by it, and I want to thank the guys at Google, or should I say Alphabet, who make Google Earth available, because it's just a fantastic tool for looking at the Earth up close and personal. But there's other avenues to look at. I wish there would be more available Landsat imagery that is declassified. But one last question, and then I'm going to let you go. I've found in the research that I've done in Central America and in the United States that there are some areas that have been photoshopped. And the best explanation I can give for these coverings is that they don't want us to see these areas. Has it been your experience to run through and find imagery that's been manipulated and retouched?
Well, I will say this. Some of the landsat imagery, I definitely remember looking at some of sites that look like they had been pixelated. And when I say pixelated, I mean if you open one of these images in Adobe Photoshop and you run like a filter on it to bring out the color, make the color really vibrant, you can see where the pixels look really blurred in places. But yeah, I have found that in the older Landsat imagery. I haven't found any instances in Google Earth, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you have to take into consideration, I'm sure that the government has had a hand in helping these satellite imagery databases, you know, be allowed into the public access arena. So I know that the powers that be probably do bless them. That's about all that I can say about that. I haven't personally had any encounters with Google Earth yet, though, no.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, hey, Angela, thank you. Thank you for giving us the time to talk with you. And definitely want to promote the book when it comes out. Let me know and Facebook page, and hopefully my own website will be out by then. We can promote it there. But want to continually support your work. And I'm going to post a couple of pages from your Underwater Lost City candidates page from the satellite archaeology page, and maybe a couple of other things just to give people a heads up on what you're working on. Is that okay?
Yeah, and I want to definitely say thank you too, Cliff. I really appreciate your interest in pursuing me to come on your show. I really appreciate it greatly.
Okay, well, hey, maybe you'll pick up some more interested people. And, you know, why not consider, I don't know if you have to dial in the crowdfunding, but, you know, always, you know, keep the funds flowing as much as possible so you can keep tracking and getting people out to these sites to verify them. I love to support you there. But well, we'll do what we can to let people know at least your major sites are up and running, and that you're looking for funding as much as possible.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it again. Yeah, thanks a lot, Cliff.
So my guest today is...